All right. So, hi, everyone. I'm going to fill in on some of the details that Libby didn't get into in terms of how the system works. I'm actually also going to be able to address some of the things that Bridget brought up and talk about how we've dealt with some of the challenges that New York has faced. So, so basically, I'm going to describe the system that we have in Massachusetts. And I'll just jump right in. So Libby already gave the high-level summary, but to the point around, is this available for others? Yes, it is. And my intent here is to talk a little bit about the reality of what that means. So yes, you can go on the website right now and download the software and get going, but it's not quite that simple. So you saw part of this slide from Libby. So it has, you know, ESP has this ability to transmit individual level case reports of notifiable diseases, but the other thing that it has as well is this aggregate level querying ability. So it's really two pieces. So we can send the reports to the health department, or the health department can say, I would like to know for non-notifiable disease, you know, the proportion of people who are obese smokers in this patient population, and the practice sites can approve that or deny requests of that information and then send it back. And I'll get into how that works. But so those are the two main components. And I'll talk a little bit about each. So Libby already gave the sort of overview of the individual level notifiable disease reporting. And so in addition to the, you know, incident report of the disease, this new expansion to longitudinal case reporting is really where we're focused now. The other part of it is sort of a whole other set of work. And so we have the ability to query chronic diseases like hypertension, diabetes, asthma, self-reported smoking status that's captured in the EMR, vaccination data. We also actually use ESP. So one of our sites is an ILINet participant, and they use ESP for their ILINet reporting. We're doing a query right now looking at different methods of contraceptive use and whether trends have changed over time in light of recent events in our country. We can look at things like HIV testing, Hep C testing. So that's a big gap for a lot of health departments. You know, unless the health department is essentially paying for those services themselves, they don't know, are people really getting tested per the recommendations? And so we have the ability to help DPH understand whether or not certain recommendations are being followed. We have other functionality for Lyme disease. And then another big aspect of or capability that's there is for program evaluation. So one example is the state funded a number of communities to do interventions for certain chronic diseases. So try to, you know, decrease hypertension through this clinical setting in your community. And our data was one source of the larger evaluation where we could do, you know, long-term time series to monitor on a community level based on zip code, basically did the trends change over time, stratifying it by a number of factors. So that's another aspect of the system that is important to point out. So the way it works is, you know, the ESP server is separate. So whether it's virtual or physical, it's separate from the EMR. It's essentially a copy of the EMR. And I think in terms of some of the benefits. So one, it allows the system to not be specific to a particular EMR. So it's not only possible for Epic or something like that. It is separate from the EMR, and so it doesn't burden that. It doesn't literally burden that system. And then it remains behind the practices firewall. So I'll get into sort of what that means. So basically this is the concept of a distributed data network. So the idea is that these sites participate, the data remain behind their firewall. So this is from the aggregate querying perspective, because obviously stuff leaves their firewall for the individual case reports. But if you want to ask about information that's not reportable to the state health department on an individual level, distributed data network enables that. So basically, the idea here is that the health department has a question, you submit SQL code, or we also have a user interface that's rather simplistic, but you can submit queries that way. The data partner receives the query and is like, okay, that sounds good, yes, I will run that, and I will report that data to the health department. It gets returned to the health department by site, so of the participating practices. And the benefits that one are clearly, you know, that the information that's not allowed to be reported on an individual level is not reported in that way. But I think the other really important thing is that the people who really understand the data retain the ability to to sort of participate or not in a particular query and then explain the results to us. So they may say, sure, we'll run this query, but you need to understand that in our practice, we change the way that we capture whatever, you know, measured blood pressure, or we've changed the way we capture particular elements. And so they can explain that to us because they're seeing all the queries that are coming in and approving those. So I think it's important also to note sort of who's involved in Massachusetts. And I think this gets at one of the items that Bridget brought up. So we are the Department of Population Medicine. So we're an academic department, research institute. My colleagues developed the system in collaboration with the State Health Department in the beginning, about 10 years ago. So I think that's the other thing, is this has been going on for a long time. And we have a separate informatics vendor. So I think to the point of health departments, public health, being able to employ people with that level of training and sort of accommodate their cost, basically they get contracted separately, and they do all the technical work. These are our, so in addition to being the sort of developers of the system, we're the coordinating center for Massachusetts. Then these are our partner clinical sites. So Atrius is a large multi-site, multi-specialty practice. MassLeap Community Health Centers represents a number of community health centers across the state. And I think another important thing is that the way it's worked is that the model for participation varies by clinical partner. And that's been a way of sort of getting people to participate. We're not requiring everyone to participate in the same way. So of these five sites, broadly speaking, in Massachusetts, four participate in notifiable disease reporting or are about to. And then three of them permit these aggregate queries. So we're not saying you can only do one or the other. It's really sort of choose how you want to engage. And then the other thing is that Commonwealth Informatics has back-end access, for example, for one of our clinical partners, and so they can really get in the data when there's a problem, something doesn't make sense. They have access, and that was an agreement that they worked out. That's not a requirement for participation. And so it really, we've met people essentially where they're at. So this is like, you know, 10 steps, but within every step, there's like another 100. So I think to Bridget's point around, you know, some of the mapping issues, the lack of standardizations in EMR, it's a major part of the work. So essentially there's kind of two sections to it. It's the implementation and installation of the software, which I am not the expert on by any means, and sort of prepping it, so backloading the data, making sure there's enough historic data to actually do the querying. And then there's all of the stuff that has to happen in order for the State Health Department to say, yeah, you can send that. And that's a whole other set of work. So we can say, well, when we look in the EMR, this is how we define chronic hepatitis C. But the Health Department wants to know that that also meets their approach to chronic hepatitis C. So there's a lot of work that goes on there. So ongoing maintenance for all of those mappings. So one of the big things we're tackling right now is medication names and how do you deal with all of the variety of ways azithromycin might be spelt, even though there's only one way to spell it. So this is the current state, and this is from the perspective of the aggregate querying. So these are the three sites that participate in that population level assessments that we do, and what it adds up to at the moment is about 1.5 million patients, which translates to about 20% of the Massachusetts population. But it varies widely depending on what town or city you're looking at. So you can see in Somerville, which is a city in Massachusetts, we have about 60% of the census population covered. But in parts of the state out west, we have very little coverage. And so it's not a complete picture, it's a skewed picture, and it's a their clinical practices, and so it's really important to keep all those things in mind when thinking about building this kind of system and then interpreting our results. The other thing that's important to note is that, and Bridget mentioned this, but it's patient's current address, and so it's their zip code. And so anything we do is, for the individual level reports, those contain the complete address, but for the aggregate querying right now, we don't go below zip code, but we theoretically could because we have complete address. And so our chronic disease colleagues have asked about, you know, looking at census tract level kind of stuff. And so it's feasible. We would need the participating sites to agree to it, basically. And then this is just sort of like, so how does it look when you look at some of these chronic diseases? So it surprises me every time that it looks really similar to other sources. The main source for a lot of chronic disease surveillance is BRFSS, and the results are really similar. And we have other data sources as well. So for like pediatric asthma, there's a school survey that's done every year, and our data align quite well with it. So some of the lessons learned, and I think just the reality of the system. So one, this stemmed out of many years of work and really long-term collaborations. So people at the State Health Department know people at the Department of Population for a long time and work really well together. And then they know people at the clinical sites. And it's really about people who know each other and respect each other and have a lot of trust. That's where it started from. What's happening now is that meaningful use requirements will be met with ESP reporting. And then recently, for a set of clinics that are funded by the health department for certain services, as a part of their contract, they'll be required to use ESP for reporting. The scope of that is very much to be determined. But now we're sort of moving beyond the somewhat personal buy-in to implementing it in a more sort of systematic way. DPH invested in it from the start. I mean, there was funding from CDC. There's been funding from ONC. There's been funding from other places. Our department's gotten funding from other sources as well to supplement some of the extra stuff that basically there hasn't been other funding for. And one of them is RiskScape, which I'll show you a little bit more of. And then I think to this point of, you know, we've said essentially, you know, come as you are, however you want to participate, that will allow that. And I think it's been necessary, but it brings a lot of challenges with it. So just to reiterate, some of them I've already touched on, but we don't have the entire state covered by any means. Validation of the data completeness, the performance of the algorithms, it's a lot of work. The maintenance is a lot of work, ensuring that the mapping is maintained. Sustainability and funding is a challenge, as you all know. And I think we've not quantified the benefits to the sites. You know, we haven't been able to say, you have saved X number of hours by participating in this. And in some ways, we haven't really had to. We've demonstrated in previous publications sort of increased timeliness and completeness. Race ethnicity data in particular is very, very well populated. And for some of the reportable diseases where the passive surveillance system doesn't include any sort of case investigations, it's really a massive sort of view into something they didn't have before. But again, this meaningful use requirements and the requirement of some sites to report has kind of changed the dialogue a bit. So I'll just give you a quick view into something that our department built along with Commonwealth Informatics that is as Libby mentioned, essentially it's a visual representation of data that is available for that aggregate querying system. So it's not all of the sites, it's the ones that permit this. So we essentially have a dashboard so this is only available to DPH users. They have to be approved to get a login and a password, but it's really meant for the state to have access as well as the clinical sites that participate. So you can come on here, you can decide you want to look at one of the conditions we've already sort of processed and presented to you, or you can create your own, meaning there's already a condition defined. But it has a number of functionalities, so one of which is a map. So basically, if you came here and you clicked on map up there, and you wanted to look at, this is obesity among adults, basically you get a heat map of the prevalence of obesity. Data is updated monthly for this system. You can sort of adjust the coloring and zoom in onto the zip code level, and you can get more information. You can also stratify by different conditions and comorbidities and geographies and zip code. So again, this is obesity, and this is showing Boston versus Massachusetts. And then actually one other thing I'll point out before I finish up is that I don't have a slide for you. So we have time series data. So if you wanted to look at trends in obesity or asthma in a particular overall by town, by zip code, you can easily pull that up. One of the things we did, and I took the slide out because I didn't think I had time, but was we looked at hepatitis C testing over time by birth cohort, and you can see that the 1945 to 1965 people who are supposed to be getting tested, they're still not all getting tested, but many more after the CDC recommendation. So it's really powerful, and I think that I'll also say this is brand new. I mean, it's not like we've had this for years. We're really just rolling this out in the last month, basically. And ultimately, that continuity of care information will be there for HIV and Hep C as well. So these are all of my colleagues, and there are many more. So thanks very much. So there's five, but within, you know, some of those systems, so Atrius is one practice, but they have, I don't even know how many sites across the state, like a dozen sites. The Mass Leave of Community Health Center actually, so they represent, I don't know how many now, less than probably about 20 or so community health centers across the state who they may have disparate systems, but we're actually sort of leveraging this other system that they create. And so we're basically using a data mart that they already have. But so technically it's five.
So you have to do that data extract mapping and code mapping specific to each of those sites?
Yep. Yeah. And so some of the sites, so for example, Planned Parenthood of Massachusetts in Fenway, they're only reporting chlamydia for sure, and gonorrhea. So it's really, you know, like I said, they're not all doing everything right now. It's at different stages. I can't answer your second question, but for your first question, I mean, the answer is generally yes, we do that. When we see something weird that we can't, so there's sort of two levels of it. There's the individual case reporting where it's much more tangible of this when you're going through the validation. You say, why are we seeing this many people that we think have HIV, but they're not in our surveillance data? What happened? And it turned out, for example, the way the HIV detection algorithm was written was that if you're meeting that definition based on medications, it was meant to avoid people who are getting prescriptions for PrEP. But there was an anomaly at a site where a couple of people were getting prescribed PrEP in a way that was unexpected, and so they were getting picked up as having an HIV case. So we do that level of really detailed follow-up by site when we can for individual case reporting. For the aggregate level stuff, it's really unwieldy. I mean, I'm being completely honest. Like, for the program evaluation stuff, we had 9 intervention communities. They had matched comparison communities. We were looking at, like, 6 different chronic conditions over 5 years. And we saw some trends that we couldn't understand. And in the time frame, we sort of tabled them and said, okay, at some point, we will go back to them and say, why is your measured blood pressure, you know, declining over time? And so it's an ongoing process. And sometimes our informatics vendor, for the systems that they have more access to, they're able to see what's going on. They can see a drop in encounters. And we have routine QA stuff that we run. But it's a lot of work. So that's the...
We're going to need
no.
Call time here. Sorry. At the end, hopefully, we'll have a little more time. So thank you very much.
Okay.